Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Jim Fettgatter. He is the chief executive of the Association of Foreign Investors in Real Estate, an organization known as AFIRE, a position he assumed in 1992. Before joining AFIRE, Mr. Fettgatter spent 15 years in the real estate industry, with the last five spent in Dutch and British property companies, both in Washington, D.C. Mr. Fettgatter served as an officer in the U.S. Navy and holds a B.S. from Oklahoma State University and an MBA from Harvard Business School. Jim, we welcome you to our show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Can you describe what AFIRE does generally, and then who would be your typical member?
AFIRE is a nonprofit trade association, and we advocate on behalf of foreign investors, primarily institutional investors, coming into the U.S. market. We also provide, in addition to that, we provide educational conferences for them. We do three annual conferences a year. And we provide a network of high-level contacts for them among themselves, among the foreign investors themselves, and certain select U.S. advisors.
Under the hat of institutional investors, just give me a couple examples of who that is. Is that big hedge funds, or is that big retirement?
It's typically not hedge funds.
Okay.
They are typically sovereign wealth funds, pension plans.
Okay.
Could be public companies. Could be mutual fund like entities. I'm thinking primarily about like that of Germany. That are sponsored by banks. Perhaps some private equity funds.
Okay.
Not necessarily hedge funds.
Okay. With the whole world of commercial real estate open to them, the U.S. received 60% of the votes as far as the most stable and secure investments. So what's in place here that's lacking elsewhere?
Well, the one thing is lacking is that nobody is bigger than we are. We are the largest real estate market in the world. We are generally the most transparent. There are a few companies that do transparency index, and U.S. is always one or two in that. So that's definitely a plus. We are probably the most diversified real estate market. You can diversify by a city. You can diversify by product. You can diversify by region. There are many countries, in fact, that the only viable real estate investment could be made in one city. For instance, UK, really, London is where you want to be, not any place, not Birmingham. So all those are good reasons. Plus, we speak English. Everybody in this country speaks English. So as long as you know the universal language of business, you can do business here.
Two names I noticed that weren't on the list when we're talking about most stable and secure was Japan and China, and that surprised me. So the second and third largest economies didn't make the list, at least on that survey.
I don't think, as long as we've been asking that question, that they've ever made that list at all. Obviously, because they're not considered stable and secure by international investors.
That actually surprised me. Okay.
Did it? Well,
yeah, I did. I mean,
that surprised me. I mean, usually the ones that show up are the U.S. is always there.
Okay.
Canada is usually always there. U.K. is there. Australia is there. Netherlands is there often. Germany is there often. It's the countries that have the most sophisticated and professional real estate organizations. Now, that's not to say that Japan doesn't have a sophisticated real estate organization, but it's not particularly transparent.
Okay. See, I didn't know that. That was good information. Now, I noticed Canada had kind of gotten up there, approaching the high teens, almost 20%, and now they're down somewhere around 5%. So what's occurred there to decrease how they're viewed?
Oil.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a one industry.
Well,
it's, not really, you know, but it has a big impact, obviously.
Canada is typically considered a natural resource play. So you've got oil, you've got minerals of other kinds, you've got copper, and you know what the commodities have been doing lately. So I think that it's created some instability in that market.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Now, as far as heading to the United States, let's say the clientele that you are used to, would they head to a Houston for investment, which would be an oil play, or do most of them stay away from something like that?
Actually, Houston was one of the top five cities back in the good old days of oil. So yes, it was. They did invest in Houston, and they as an energy play. Now it's sort of the city itself in our survey has sort of dropped out of sight. So they'll go where the job growth is, and the job growth had been in Houston.
Your report describes three types of properties: core property, value-added property, opportunistic property. So what would be an example of a core property?
I knew you were going to ask me that. That's a hard question to answer. You can probably get very different answers from different people about what that means. A core, I would describe a core asset as being a CBD office building, maybe a multifamily building in the central business district, and maybe a dominant mall in a market, if you're going to talk about retail. Stable, fully occupied with AAA tenants, et cetera. If you're talking about value added, a lot of people describe that as maybe a fixer upper.
Okay.
You know what that might be if it was a house, but it could be in an office building as well. An infill site to come in and develop something, perhaps multifamily, and then a closer in site. Retenanting of a retail project, so are remixing the tenants. So anything that you can do that is going to increase the value beyond the value in which you purchased the asset.
Okay.
Opportunistic is maybe something that's heavily discounted for some reason when you purchase it. Maybe a secondary market. A market that perhaps they feel like it's been overlooked and they feel like there's an opportunity.
Okay.
And maybe emerging industries. Maybe it's an industry that's coming on strong, and maybe it's biotech or something in some particular location. So that's the way I would define an opportunistic.
What I found interesting is fully 50% of your members that responded in that report were not going to invest any of their funds in opportunistic property. So they were just looking for the more stable inventory, I guess.
Well, that's primarily because of who the membership is, as I told you. Because if you're a pension fund and if you're a sovereign wealth fund, you've got to be a pretty conservative investor. You've got whole countries depending on you, or you have your pension fund board, and they don't take a lot of risk.
Okay. Are there some countries more welcoming than others when it comes to foreign investors? And is the U.S. among the more favorable?
Yes. U.S. is probably one of the easier countries to invest in, but You know, all the ones that I listed earlier that were considered stable and secure, Canada, Australia, they're all open markets. Certainly, there are probably a lot of countries that are more difficult, like as some of the Asian countries would be more difficult to invest in. But it's, if you're talking about government regulations or that sort of thing, that would be the case.
Have we had recent FIRPTA rule changes? And what were FIRPTA rules to begin with, and have they become more favorable?
We did have a reform of FIRPTA that was a part of the appropriation bill that was passed on December 18th last year. So there was that massive omnibus appropriation bill that, you know, the House and Senate agreed to and the President signed. FIRPTA was passed originally in 1980. It's a tax on foreign investors in U.S. real estate, and they are subject to the U.S. corporate tax rate. And as you know, the U.S. corporate tax rate is one of the highest in the world. It's been talked about for a long time with an attempt to try to reduce it because we're uncompetitive. And it made our real estate market uncompetitive. Now, we still have a lot of foreign investors here, but we have foreign investors for a lot of the reasons that I described earlier. So a foreign investor has to file taxes and pay taxes in the U.S. Now, a perfect example of why this could be unfair, if you buy General Motors stock and you're a foreign investor and you sell General Motors stock and you make a killing on General Motors stock, you don't pay the U.S. government anything. You pay your own country taxes. But if you bought the General Motors building and down in New York, and then you sold it and made a killing on it, you would, under FIRPTA, you would have to pay at least 30-35% taxes to the U.S. government.
I'm just curious, in that case, would you also then have to pay your country's taxes on top of?
Or not? Well, I can't answer that because okay. It probably depends on the country.
Okay.
Typically, there may be offsets, but I think typically, you know, I may be going out on a limb and saying this, but typically I would say that the U.S., the rate they pay in the U.S. is going to be much higher than what they would have paid in their own country.
Okay.
Now, this the big inequality would be a foreign pension fund. Let's say it's a Dutch pension fund, and they come over here and they invest in the U.S. And if they're doing a joint venture with CalPERS or CalSTRS, they don't pay tax. CalPERS doesn't pay taxes. They're a non-taxable entity. So the Dutch pension fund would have to pay taxes to the U.S. government, and the domestic pension fund would not. So that's what changed on December 18th. Foreign pension funds are now exempt from this FIRPTA tax, so they become non-taxable in the U.S.
Okay.
It was a big deal.
What percentage change do you think that'll make, and how much money shows up here? Just curious.
No idea.
Okay. Seems like 60% of it was willing to show up anyway. So I just wondered how much it was. It's not why they showed up in the first place, but it's a perk, and I understand that.
Yeah, it's an impediment. I think that it's certainly going to increase investment. Just anecdotally, we know many pension funds that look at the U.S. and they look at the FIRPTA laws, and they just can't seem to make the numbers work.
Okay.
On an after-tax basis, that, you know, 4% yield maybe that they're paying for some downtown core office building, after taxes becomes 3% or 2% maybe.
Right.
So it makes it tough to pencil out.
What impact would you say foreign investors have on the areas that they're interested in? So New York City has their attention. What percentage of the market are they, and have they had a fair impact on price?
Well, I don't actually know what percentage of foreign invest or what percentage of commercial real estate is owned by foreigners in New York. I mean, we don't really know how much is owned by in the U.S. as a whole.
Okay.
Because there's really, it's really very difficult to to measure it. We don't collect the data, and even firms that do collect the data on real estate transactions like Real Capital Analytics find it difficult. For instance, you don't know how many foreign investors are buying REITs because you don't know how many shares they're buying or who actually is buying them. And if you have a fund that has both foreign investors and domestic investors in it, there's no way to go into that fund and find out who's investing.
Okay.
If it's private, so it's difficult. Now people are saying that foreign investors are jacking up the prices of condos in New York, but that's really not within our purview. That's not our people.
Okay. No, it doesn't. I guess that's the group I'm used to hearing about, the housing market, that type of thing. Well, what's interesting, and maybe this does apply in a way, hedge funds came into the United States, were in the United States, and for the first time paid attention to residential real estate. It didn't mean they bought 25% of it, but they offered on everything that moved. And in their offering, it made prices increase just because they were a competitor that was aggressive. So I guess my question is, for the types of properties, these core properties that everyone seems most interested in, is there a fair amount of competition for each of those when it becomes available?
Sure, but, I'm not convinced. Bear in mind, I'm not a sales broker, so I'm not on the front lines of offers coming in. But it is my understanding, just from the people that are in our organization that are, yes, they certainly do get they get bids from foreign investors, but it's not any more than the bids they get from domestic investors, because domestic investors have been just as acquisitive as foreigners lately.
The expected cap rate from these investments, you just kind of tossed out 4%. Was that somewhat accurate?
No, that was only because I could take a quarter of 4, and if I said 5, I could take a quarter of 5.
Okay.
I used to get asked this question all the time. What is a foreign investor's cap rate? What does it look like? And, maybe it was different way back in the beginning when the Japanese were buying real estate in the late 80s or whatever. But it pretty much it's leveled out throughout the globe. And people are the foreign investors coming in the U.S. are really not paying any more than anybody else is paying. They're paying market, and they're getting advised by a lot of U.S. advisors, so they're not really overpaying unless there's some underlying reason why they want that particular asset.
Okay, you got in the industry and in your position really about the time of a really bad downturn for commercial real estate. So we had the Resolution Trust Company and all that dealing with it, and I thought this last downturn for commercial real estate would be worse. And it didn't end up being worse.
No, it didn't.
It was way worse for housing, and I thought commercial real estate would follow through, and it didn't. What's the reason for that?
If you remember back in the early 90s, there was a huge oversupply of commercial real estate, and much of that. I'm showing my age here because I can remember this.
I'm with you.
Much of this was fueled by the savings and loans, and they were pumping money into the real estate market, maybe indiscriminately. So we didn't have that in this last go around, because I think the banks still remembered that, and they were being very tight. So the supply has been kept somewhat in check. So really, commercial real estate, went through some tough times, but not nearly as much as the early 90s.
See, I kind of thought commercial mortgage-backed securities were sort of the equivalent of that. And it looks like, although a lot of that financing hasn't come back, it looks like it, if it was going to create that kind of damage, it was prevented by lenders saying, you know what, what's the point? Let's work it out.
Well, that's right. You know, the everybody back 5 years ago used to talk about how many of the term loans were coming due.
And, exactly.
And, you know, how many millions and billions of dollars of loans were going to come due, and this was going to be a catastrophe. And it didn't really happen. They either extended and the market improved, or somebody came back in and took them out, or they, you know, the mezzanine financing came in and people were taking some of that equity out. So anyway, there were ways that it got worked through.
Generally, when you get opinions of people about what's next and they own something, I don't know that I always feel comfortable with their conclusion, because they're kind of, in a way, supporting whatever they've just decided to do. So I'm just curious, and this is not an indictment in any way of anybody's opinion, but in, say, in 2006 and 7, if you had taken a survey of what's next for the commercial real estate, would the membership have been uneasy or still been very happy with what they thought was next?
Well, I honestly can't remember what our survey showed at that time. But I will say this, that, you know, I do know that in 07, and in that same period, really before the crash, the U.S. was not considered the top, well, it was considered the top stable and secure market. But the percentage of people that were saying that were much lower than they are today.
Okay.
I'm going from memory here because I don't have those in front of me. But it was much lower and in competition with some other countries. So there was, I suppose there was some uneasiness with what they thought perhaps was a little bit of a bubble. But I can't honestly tell you that. Any of our members were shorting. we're making the big short.
Okay. In the most recent survey, not that there was a lot of concern, but the biggest threat to a real estate downturn the membership felt was an interest rate hike.
Right.
And do they expect that to be this year? That,
well, you know, the interesting thing about that is correct. The biggest response was, the thing they feared most was perhaps the interest rate hike, which they all knew was going to happen anyway. They were just worried about it. But the second biggest answer was the downturn in China.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, That's even a more interesting thing to think about. But, you know, I think they were just concerned about a slowdown in business activity. I think they were concerned about, you know, the fact that if interest rates start rising, the cost of capital goes up. So, therefore, you know, if you want to keep the same spread and your cost of capital goes up, then you can't pay as much for a building because your yield has to go up.
Exactly.
So I suspect that was what their concern was, even though it was anticipated.
I wonder if the survey was taken today that China might move into first position.
Yeah, I have a feeling maybe so, because that's certainly been the case in the stock market.
Yeah, that's been pretty volatile.
Yeah.
Does the Japanese story have anything to tell us about what's China likely to go through with the volatility of the stock market and the declining values there, and maybe the real estate?
I don't know. It's a good question. I certainly have. There's certainly a lot of people draw parallels between the Chinese investors and the Japanese investors of 20 years ago. But I don't. I mean, I think they're just two entirely different countries. The Japanese stock market, I don't think, was controlled by the government as nearly as much as the Chinese market. So that's a hard one to make a comparison.
That's okay. I've really enjoyed our talking to you. We've been with Jim Fettgetter, and Chief Executive of the Association of Foreign Investors in Real Estate. And thanks for giving us a glimpse at the big world of commercial real estate. Really appreciate it.
I enjoy talking to you.
All right.
Thank you.
Jim, thanks so much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.